How is the word crotch so disgusting?
There? I know. It's up there with the word moist for me in terms of words that just like give me the heebie-jeebies.
Like it makes my skin crawl.
Welcome to Lawyers Behaving Badly. I'm Karen Delaney.
And I am Jennifer Judge. How are you doing, friend?
Just white-knuckling it through the end of the year, as per usual.
Very, very much same. I just got out of a couple of work meetings where we were talking about, oh, well, this needs to be ready to go by the end of the year. And you're just like,
Is the end of the year.
Yes,
it exactly. Is the end of the year. I don't have time for anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was like, okay, well, that's like 2 weeks away. Okay, well, we'll do our best. Yeah, it's Christmas magic over here. How are you doing?
No, that is it. I'm just white-knuckling it through the end of the year, and there's an absolute ton of work stuff that needs to get done. And as you and I were discussing immediately before we started recording, there's also just a bunch of self-inflicted extracurricular activities mm-hmm. going on right now mm-hmm. where it's like, wouldn't it be fun to take my mom to a holiday lunch? And it was great fun, but now, you know, I'm just scrambling to get everything done. And so it's, what a joyful time of year. We'll make it through.
Yes. I know. I keep getting invites from people and it's like, hey, do you have time to have lunch by the end of the year? And I'm like, no,
it is the end of the year. I can't stress this enough. Like the year is effectively over. Don't ask me to go to lunch. Don't ask me to like meet for dinner or anything. I'm about at the point where I'm about to stop accepting any new work for the remainder of the year, because I'm pretty much booked up and tied up, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't have the bandwidth for anything else. And yeah. Good times. Good time. And we're a dollar late, late. Wait, no, a dollar short. Day That's late. What it is. I'm Day like, late, I'm so short. Scrambled. I'm like, what is it? What is that phrase that literally everybody knows? Yeah. We're a day late and a dollar short over here. Hoping to publish this on Friday. We'll see how I do with that. I'm really got my fingers crossed for me.
Yeah, it was one of those where this week just kind of got by us, and like the day we would have recorded, I had no internet. And then like, I know I had my like company work party and you had other things going on as well. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of like, it ain't happening before Thursday this week. It's just one of those weeks.
But we'll at least publish an episode this week. So that's exactly. Nice. Good for us. Exactly. Maybe
good for us.
Maybe our last episode of the year, we'll see. I don't have high hopes for being able to get anything else done for the rest of the year, but I don't know. Maybe I'll pull a rabbit out of the hat and we'll get something next week. I don't know.
Yeah. You said like, this will be the last episode of the year. And my mind immediately was like, oh shit, we got to do another episode. So yeah.
Hey, I saw that look on your face where you were like, wait, we didn't talk about this. Another episode.
We just talked about how busy we are, Kippy.
I know. So. I know. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get all my work done. What do you mean another episode? So yeah. That's it's not looking good for us, but we'll see. We'll see.
So stick around. There'll be something eventually, definitely in the beginning of the year. Maybe it'll be Hot Toppies. Maybe we'll do an old standby Hot Toppies episode.
Well, I did for the episode that we missed that would have been our anniversary episode. I did type out an outline of why I intensely hated one of the smut books that I hate read that I was texting you about. So always happy to dig that back up and talk about the various things that I hated in that book and why I don't read blue collar romance.
We may have to do that too. Maybe I'll go back to some of the smut books that I DNF'd this year and like dig them out and finish them just so we can each have like a book we hate read. A book report we hate read.
Well, and I only finished this one because I was texting you nonstop about just how egregiously stupid I thought it was. And I was
Which
so disappointed
something
too.
Because you read Overtake My Heart this year.
Yeah, no, I've read a lot of really stupid romance. So I was texting you just about how egregiously bad I thought this one was. And I think part of it was I was disappointed because I had read another book by this author. In fact, her most recent book, where I really loved the supporting cast of characters, didn't mm-hmm. particularly love the female main character. In fact, I thought she was just a gigantic walking red flag. And if the main male character had been my friend, I would have been like, guy, run. Like, you don't want any part of this. You need to run as far away as fast as you can. And in spite of that, I read this author's another book by this author, and yeah, didn't go well. So I have notes from that. Perhaps we could do that and combine it with some other hot toppies, and we'll be good to go. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Well, that sounds good to me, but we'll stay tuned. We'll let you know what is on the docket for us after through the end of the year, beginning of next year. We'll be around eventually.
Yeah, we'll be back at some point. Everybody, every professional mess enthusiast has to take a break at some point. So this might be ours. Well, our hot topic today is about not filing nudie pics on the public docket.
Who knew?
This popped up on Twitter yesterday. The Southern District issued an order sanctioning an attorney because he filed nude pictures of the opposing party on the public docket.
Oh my God.
And I thought, what in the world could this possibly be about where you end up filing this on the public docket? So I went and skimmed the pleadings. In this case is insane. And it's a real shame that there's not more on the docket, because this could have made a great full episode, but there's just not enough source material there. But the plaintiff filed a lawsuit in this case in early 2022. He is some sort of doctor. He may be a neurosurgeon or a spine doctor. I'm not sure, but he operates a spine clinic. And then he also has a real estate LLC, which apparently owns his townhome. I don't think he's a real estate investor or anything. It's just he put, I mean, I assume this is like a major asset. And so he put it in that LLC. He hired two employees, Pearl and Derek, to be his office manager. That's Pearl. And to be his medical assistant. And that's Derek.
Mm-hmm.
And in this complaint, he alleges that Pearl and Derek conspired over the course of several years to steal millions of dollars from him by bank fraud, wire fraud, identity theft, computer fraud and hacking, impersonating him, and unauthorized practice of law. Then he alleges that they poisoned him by causing him to ingest antifreeze, leading to his hospitalization for kidney failure. And he says, like, at the same time I was hospitalized for kidney failure, my dog was hospitalized. Like, I had to take my dog to the vet for kidney failure too. And so, like, I think they poisoned me and my dog. When I was reading these allegations, I was like, oh, this is what it's like to be so stupidly rich, because you couldn't take like $50 out of one of my bank accounts without me noticing within a week, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
This guy alleges that Pearl installed a keystroke logger on his work computer, unbeknownst to him. That is how she got access to his various accounts, his usernames, his passwords. After installing that keystroke logger, started moving large amounts of money out of his various bank accounts. And when I say large, I mean, in one instance, it was $430,000 out of a Citibank account.
Yeah, like I would have noticed that.
How are you so rich you don't notice $500,000 almost? Then a week later, $250,000.
Oh my gosh.
And then I think at some point later, another $100,000. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there's a check for another $118,000 that's made out to this plaintiff doctor that appears to be signed by him. But he claims he has no memory of writing that check and no record of depositing it in his account. And there's a lot in this complaint that isn't said, where you're like, well, why? Like, what reasonable person would this happen to? So he says, as a result of them moving all this money around, he was unaware that his house fell into foreclosure.
How are you unaware that your house? Okay.
Yes, thank you. And he claims that they somehow like intercepted his mortgage payments, and then they concocted another scheme whereby one of them criminally impersonated an attorney via email, purporting to help him prevent foreclosure on his townhouse. And under the fraudulent guise of a lawyer named Tracy Pearson, who the complaint says is a real lawyer, sent emails to the doctor, courtesy copied either to Pearl or Derek, falsely telling the doctor that like his legal problems are being handled and don't worry about it, it's all fine. And in fact, there's an email supposedly from this attorney sent to the doctor that says, "Hi, doctor, this is Tracy, the attorney helping you on a few things. Everything is going perfectly and as planned." And it's all like lowercase. It's a run-on sentence. And so his house ends up falling into foreclosure. He claims that he has to spend a lot of money like dealing with that whole issue. He also alleges that they criminally impersonated his accountant in advising that his taxes were in order and that nothing was owed and that that was false, that they created a fake billing company related to billing for patients.
This is quite a conspiracy that they're involved in.
You guys, you mowing the lawn over there?
Our yard guy literally showed up for the first time in like a month just now. And I was like, are you kidding
God
me?
God damn it.
There is podcasting going on right now.
I know. Don't you know that you're at the location of one of the legal industry's foremost podcasts?
Yes.
So he alleges that they created this fake billing company. And they told him that patient invoices were being handled properly when in fact they weren't ever going to insurance companies. At some point in December 2020, they don't say how, but they say to his shock and horror, the doctor determined he was corresponding with a sock puppet lawyer and accountant. He became suspicious, but uncertain whether Pearl, his office manager, was behind the scene. And he asked her to meet with him and he shared his suspicions and she didn't have any response. And then on January 22nd, 2020, he claims he was in good health. He was admitted to the hospital for kidney failure. The same day, his dog also suffered kidney failure. He remained in the hospital for 9 days.
That's a serious hospital stay.
It is. That's a really long time. After meeting with Pearl about the fake lawyer and the fake accountant emails, he claims he found antifreeze in his office. The bottle was open and missing fluid. And he's like, hey, ingestion of antifreeze can cause kidney failure. And by the way, like, what is antifreeze doing in a doctor's office?
It feels like that's a very basic step that you would fail to take in this massive conspiracy. And then you leave out the antifreeze in the office with like a little note that says like, don't look here.
So I did it. I did it. I know. Why would you leave this sitting in the office, right? So he says, well, I realized basically that there had been an attempt to poison me and my dog. And he confronts Pearl and says that she remained silent the whole time. And then he fired her. He also claims that Derek and Pearl racked up hundreds of thousands of dollars to the medical practices American Express account without his authorization, which again, I mean, I understand that Pearl was supposed to be the office manager. You have to exercise some level of oversight over your business. How are they racking up hundreds of thousands of dollars in Amex charges?
Would you notice if hundreds and thousands of dollars in Amex charges hit your firm, KP? I would notice
if $5 hit. I know every dollar that comes in and out of this business, but I also don't have like, you know, presumably a couple million dollars sitting in a bank account where I'm not going to miss $700,000 going missing, you know? That's
this
not my
truly
life.
It's like the worries of the very, very ultra wealthy.
I know. I couldn't wrap my mind around this as I was reading it because I was just so stunned. Ultimately, the doctor ends up suing Pearl and Derek in federal court in New York for RICO and fraud and a whole bunch of other stuff. They file an answer, including a counterclaim, and they note that both Derek and Pearl are of Chinese descent. And that basically the doctor is a gigantic racist who made numerous just really vile comments to them. And he also, quote, likewise subjected the defendants to drug-fueled rages that manifested in racist and sexist abuse, assaults, and other outrageous and illegal conduct.
That's yikes.
They're also like, well, we're going to blow up your spot. So their counterclaim notes that various patient review websites basically say a lot of bad stuff about the doctor, like, do not see him, especially if you were a woman. First time I saw him, he made inappropriate comments about my body and handed me a Pilates DVD as my treatment.
No.
This is just an allegation on a website.
It's just an allegation, allegedly, yes.
Pearl says that at the time she was hired, she had just completed her bachelor's in biology. She had just moved to New York City. She intended to apply for medical school, and she was thrilled to get this job in a mm-hmm. doctor's office. But early in her tenure, the doctor allegedly made it known that he preferred hiring Asians, and particularly young Asian girls.
Well, that's not a gross, creepy thing to yes. say or to make disgusting. Known at all. Yes.
And says, you know, he basically, I mean, he finds young Asian girls attractive, and that's why he likes to hire mm-hmm. them. And he allegedly began requiring Pearl to go out to dinner with him, to go to Broadway shows, pressuring her to smoke pot with him daily, which she says she'd never done before meeting him.
You know me, like, pot is not my vice of choice. I don't judge those who indulge in it. But I feel like if you're a neurosurgeon, maybe daily is questionable. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I will push back on that, yeah. which is, I think it matters when you're doing it.
Fair. That's fair.
I mean, if you're not on call and you're, you know, not, I don't know. I'm not a neurosurgeon. I might not be disturbed by somebody like going home and deciding to smoke a little or have a gummy or whatever.
Yeah.
Because that's probably better, honestly, than drinking a half a bottle of Jack or something and going to the office the next day hungover.
Maybe all of the portrait you're painting of him informs my choices on and sure. my biases on how he's indulging in it too.
Well, and this is so unfair because I'm like, now, JJ, let's not jump to conclusions. But here's the allegation, the very next paragraph. As time went on, the doctor escalated his pressure, forcing Pearl to take hallucinogenic mushrooms and MDMA with him. If Pearl resisted, the doctor would explode with rage, making her work life impossible unless she complied with his demands.
See? No, I'm just kidding. There was a gut red flag there. Again, allegedly, I'm sure. Allegedly.
Yeah. He also allegedly required her to be always reachable to the extent that she could never even take the subway and be unreachable because she was a train. And he required her to spend substantial non-business hours at his house and keeping him company at just what's described as other locations. And they also describe him in this counterclaim as violent and prone to rage. And so they allege that at one point he got angry about something that had happened in the office and he threw a full 20-ounce Coke bottle at Pearl's head. He smashed a lamp. He smashed a television remote. They claim that throughout the course of Pearl's employment, he would undress in front of her, leer at her, and make sexually suggestive remarks to her.
Gross.
They claim that at least on one occasion, Pearl became drowsy from the drugs that he forced her to take, and he lifted her clothing without her consent, taking pictures of her exposed body.
Oh, gross.
And then there's a whole bunch of stuff about, you know, he was promising to pay her just an insane amount of money, like more than $500,000 for an office manager in 1 year. And he doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
They claim that there's 1 year that he doesn't pay her at all. He also said, I mean, we've talked a lot about Pearl, but Derek also says that the doctor made a number of racist remarks to him, including any time that he was unhappy with the way that Derek had said something, he would say, "Don't you understand English?" Of Even course. Though mm-hmm. Derek is of Chinese descent, he was raised in America, and according to this complaint, he speaks perfect English. And even mm-hmm. if your English is not good, this is not an appropriate way to speak to somebody.
I was about to say, even if it was or wasn't, you still don't say that.
You don't speak to somebody that way. Yeah. Derek alleges that there was some issue with the way Derek was positioning a camera, and the doctor grabbed Derek by the neck and threw him against a wall. Yes. Derek had food delivered to the doctor's home, and the doctor said it was cold and threw the food at him. Allegedly, the doctor required Derek to act as his agent in illicit drug transactions involving thousands of dollars in cash in exchange for weed, weed vials, weed pills, weed gummies, mushrooms, and chocolate mushrooms.
I mean, half that's legal in New York.
Maybe it wasn't at the time. Yeah, I don't know, because this dates back some time. Okay. I have no idea. Then Derek and Pearl allege that in 2017, they began a date, but they felt like they needed to keep it secret from the doctor because they didn't think he would react well. And in 2019, Pearl gets pregnant and she starts wearing baggy clothes to hide it from the doctor. They also say that the doctor made gross racist statements, which I won't repeat here, about the two of them dating. And again, they allege that while she was pregnant, the doctor would move Pearl's shirts up and touch her belly without her her consent. That he made comments about how he could help her, quote unquote, take care of the issue by pushing her down a flight of stairs. Suggested that he and Pearl could have a baby through IVF so he could have an heir without having to actually be with somebody or be married. And of course, they say this conduct was deeply unwelcome, deeply traumatic, and deeply frightening.
Yeah, I bet.
They allege that after Pearl had her baby, he would make Pearl work later and later at night, sometimes not letting her go home until shortly before work the next day. This is a medical practice, by the way.
I was about to say, he's a doctor.
Like, he's a doctor. And they allege that she oftentimes would not spend meaningful time with her baby for days during this period. And then in April 2020, she gets pregnant again with their second child, and they felt afraid for their own safety and the safety of their children. And they decide, like, we need to get the fuck out of here. And so they move to Texas because I guess that's where Pearl is from. And she has a brother who's a police officer. And they're like, we would rather just live here with you. So they assert various causes of action against the doctor for violation of New York's human rights law, an unjust enrichment for the failure to pay them, and punitive damages as well. So fast forward there, I think the parties get to filing motions for summary judgment. The summary judgment motion was denied, and so the case is headed to trial. But Pearl and Derek sought a stay in August of 2023. Their lawyer, Larry Lawyer,
oh no.
Interestingly, it's Pearl and Derek's lawyer that is in trouble in all of this.
I was 1,000% ready for you to tell me it was the doctor's lawyer.
Me too. And as I was reading this, it was like I could not get my brain to understand that it was Pearl and Derek's lawyer who was the guy in trouble.
That's a plot twist.
Yes. Larry files a motion to stay, and I don't know why, but he files various exhibits in support of that motion. He seeks to place some of those exhibits under seal, but not Exhibit D.
Mm-hmm.
Exhibit D has only been described as including sexually suggestive photographs of the doctor, including photographs of the doctor nude or semi-nude.
Okay.
At some point, the court orders that these be placed under seal.
Mm-hmm.
But when Larry files his opposition to the doctor's motion for summary judgment, he files these naked pictures of the doctor in the public record without putting them under seal.
That's horrendous. I mean, it's basically revenge porn in a lawsuit, regardless of whether, you know, how awful the doctor is. It's not something you do. I mean, it's just not something you do. And I've been in cases where there's exhibits similar to that, and you don't file them just in the public docket because it's not, you're basically revenge porning someone on blast just through litigation.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of sympathy for the doctor based on the allegations, but common sense says you do not do this.
No. Well, I mean, as a lawyer, you know not to do this.
Right. So, of course, the doctor files an emergency request to seal those documents. The court issues an order to show cause about why Larry Pearl and Derek Slayer shouldn't be sanctioned. Apparently, in a letter to the court, Larry argued in part that he was, quote, not aware of any per se law or rule that precludes the filing of semi-nude photos or clothed pictures of crotches on the public docket.
How is the word crotch so disgusting?
I know, it's such, it's up there with the word moist for me in terms of words that just like give me the heebie-jeebies.
Like it makes my skin crawl. And that's like, that's quite a choice to make as the lawyer, being like, where's the rule? Name it. Name the rule that says I can't do this.
And also, why would you use the word crotches instead of groin, right? You're like, yes. Judge, there's no rule against showing crotches on the docket. Like, what?
It's so gross.
Like, if you have to talk about this, at least use an anatomical term instead
yes,
of
exactly.
slang. I mean, why not just tell the judge, like, hey, yo, judge, there's no rule against dicks on the docket. So I don't understand
what's wrong.
What's wrong
with some nuts on the docket, judge?
And as you can imagine, the judge in the Southern District of New York did not take kindly to this.
No way.
And said that there can be no excuse for what Larry did, and Larry has not provided an excuse that passes muster. The public filing can only be interpreted as an attempt to humiliate and place improper pressure on the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I and mean, that's what it was.
Yeah, I mean, it. And then the court also says that Larry repeatedly failed to acknowledge that he acted improperly. At first, I guess he argued that he didn't even know that the court had sealed the photographs after mm-hmm. he originally filed them, because he was like, well, I didn't ask that they be sealed. And it's like, oh, do you think that's like that's what matters here, Larry, that you didn't ask for a picture of the doctor's yeah. groin to be sealed? Like, that's what makes
the
difference.
It's crotch.
Yeah, I'll talk about shit on this podcast, but I draw the line at having to repeatedly say that word. And then he's also, again, he reiterates, like, there's no rule against this specifically. And he's also like, look, this is super relevant to my client's claims because the pictures show how unusual and inappropriate the doctor's relationship was with them. And it's like, well, okay, they can be relevant to your claims and still be filed under seal.
Yeah,
so they
exactly.
are not available to anybody who knows how to access PACER or the court's docket.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they can be relevant and also not available on PACER.
Yes. The court says litigation, even highly charged and contentious litigation, should not subject parties to unnecessary breaches of their privacy and bodily autonomy. The court basically says, like, look, I don't believe you that you said you mm-hmm. weren't aware that these had been placed under seal. And in any event, like, your ignorance doesn't excuse doing this. So the court fined Larry, drum roll, $1,000.
This is such a paltry fine for
I
being
know.
Like
what?
We all know you did this. It was wrong. There's no excuse. $1,000.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That'll sure show Larry.
I mean, on the one hand, it does, because if he ever wants to, like, pro-hawk somewhere, he's going to have to disclose that. So, I mean, there is, like, some amount of, like, punishment in it. But at the same time, like, $1,000, come on.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's better than nothing, but
yeah.
It does seem pretty paltry in light of the violation.
Exactly.
You know?
Knowing violation. Clearly knowing violation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that was a crazy little story, and I did not expect any of that to go that way.
No, I thought it was vastly different based on the little screenshot that had made it online. So,
well, when I saw the little screenshot that had made it online, I thought he filed nude pictures of himself in the docket.
Yeah,
and that's I was like, what oh, this will be interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh God, like that's a new fear to have.
That's embarrassing.
We're just creating things for me to lie awake worried about at night now.
Well, I've got our main topic for today, and like our shitty episode last week, this one took social media by storm, and I saw it pretty quickly when it came out, and I read the pleading and then immediately texted you and was like, do not read this. I'm talking about it. Don't read it. So
yeah, because we were getting all sorts of people were tagging us in that and have continued to tag us. And I complied and I have not read anything, even though I've been thinking about it all week and wondering what I'm going to learn. So I'm very interested to hear what you've got to say.
Well, you're going to learn if you've ever wondered to yourself, you know, what kind of lawyers currently represent former President Trump? Well, then worry no longer because we're going to discuss her.
Here's the good news. I'm not because I assume they're shitty.
Yes.
And you're probably going to tell me things that validate that.
Yes. And I'm not going to do Larry Lawyer or Annie Attorney this week because she's all over the news. She's everywhere. Our lawyer this week is Alina Haba. She is currently a lawyer in Bedminster, New Jersey. And famously, she represents former President Trump in several of his current legal issues. So we will be discussing her. Alina graduated law school in 2010, which means that she's practiced two fewer years than me. And honestly, I was a little surprised by that, with how much she has kind of been around in on behalf of President Trump. On the one hand, I thought she was much more seasoned. On the other hand, I could see how someone would be opportunistic if they wanted to represent him and get their face out there. So was somewhat surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I think it also makes sense in that there's an ever diminishing number of lawyers who are willing to deal with Trump and represent him, especially in light of how well known it is that he regularly stiffs people on payments and he's very difficult to control, in addition to being a would-be fascist and all-around awful, awful, despicable human being.
Yeah. Well, that's her. After graduating law school, she clerked for a year for the presiding judge of the Civil Superior Court in Essex County, New Jersey, and then worked for a mid-sized firm for 2 years. After 2 years, she joined the firm her husband started as an equity partner, and she was at that firm for 7 years. In that time period, she gets divorced and remarried, and she starts her own firm in 2020. She is also general counsel of her husband's parking garage company, in addition to being partner at her own firm, which...
a fellow in-house traveler.
Exactly. Hello, in-house friend, which I don't know anything about her husband. Maybe he's a perfectly nice guy, but I heard that he has a parking garage company. And I was like, yeah, that's right. That makes sense.
Of course. Yeah. No, yeah, if you own a parking garage company, I'm going to just assume that you are one of the seediest human beings alive. I'm sorry. Exactly. I just will until proven otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to veer to a little side quest here. I can't remember in our Bravo time together, did you ever watch The Real Housewives of New Jersey?
No, I never did. And that's one of the biggest gaps in my Real Housewives knowledge, because I know New Jersey is supposed to be fantastic. But I think at this point, I almost feel overwhelmed by how much material there is.
I watched it up until the point where Teresa and her husband were convicted of bankruptcy fraud and perjury and a couple other things. I can't remember what else. But I haven't watched it in years.
Mm-hmm.
So I've lost all like cultural knowledge of it at this point. Apparently, there was a cast member named Siggy Flicker on Real Housewives of New Jersey for a time period.
Okay.
And I am going to send you a screenshot of Siggy's Twitter account.
Is her real name Flicker? It can't be, right?
I think it is.
That's so bizarre. So this is a screenshot of Siggy Flicker's Twitter account where her profile picture is her cozied up to Trump at some event. And the background picture appears, I assume that's Trump too, right? In the background with
Trump
the Make
too,
America Great hat on. And then there's some old guy next to her.
Yes.
And her description of herself is proud Israeli / American, all caps, censored and shadow banned. Hashtag know your worth. Hashtag Trump. Hashtag Jexit with the Israeli flag.
knowing this and seeing this, would you like to know Siggy's whereabouts on January 6th, 2021?
Do we know? Was she?
Oh, she was probably at the Capitol on January 6th.
Oh my God. Okay.
So going back to our main quest, Alina Haba represented Siggy Flicker against Facebook. Siggy claimed that she had posted a, quote, birthday message to the, quote, elegantly dressed Melania Trump, and her Facebook account was disabled. So Alina Haba sends a demand letter to Facebook's general counsel, which in parentheses I put LOL. and then I couldn't find any news about that, about whether there was any legal action filed after that. But Alina and Siggy both were all over like Fox News and Newsmax and whatever, being like, Facebook has shadow banned conservatives. So yeah, she blasted that out there. Flickr later said that Facebook is, quote, run by socialists, and that's why they didn't respond to her attorney's demand letter.
It's like, does nobody know who Mark Zuckerberg is?
Yes. Not a socialist, famously not a socialist.
Facebook notoriously was used in ethnic cleansing, and Mark Zuckerberg is basically like, ah, it's cool, free speech.
Yeah. Also, it's funny just as a concept to say that a publicly traded corporation is run by socialists. Like, yeah, it's just that's not how it works.
No, it's like, do you think the people at Vanguard are a bunch of socialists?
Yes, exactly.
Famously left-leaning BlackRock.
Exactly. Blackstone out there being like, oh yeah, definitely socialists.
Yeah.
So I was reading a Business Insider article about how Haba, and it was written in February 2022, and it noted it's not clear how she and Trump met. She never donated in his name. She never publicly, you know, donated to a campaign. There's no kind of public records of her supporting him financially.
That's his whole thing, is he's notorious for giving people access to him who would not have access to similar politicians under any circumstances. And this is why he ends up constantly being surrounded by terrible people. I mean, he's a terrible person himself, but he likes the attention. He likes the gratification. And that's the main qualification for having access to him, is simply stroking his ego.
Well, thank you for teeing that up perfectly, because her office, her law office, was 10 minutes away from his Bedminster Golf Club in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And that's where he lived in the summer of 2021. And she was often at the golf club and often sat with him for dinner multiple times that summer. So that's exactly it. She was getting access to him. September 3rd, 2021 is when she first entered an appearance as a lawyer for Donald Trump. And that's where she replaced Mark Kasowitz in one of the defamation cases filed by a woman who claimed Trump sexually assaulted her. And then she filed defamation when he denied it and said that she was making it all up.
Is this E. Jean Carroll or is this somebody else?
This was somebody else. The next one is when Haba represented him against E. Jean Carroll, when Carroll won and is about to win again against him, basically. In November 2021, Haba threatened to sue the Pulitzer Board for awarding prizes for national reporting to the Washington Post and the New York Times for their stories about Russia in the 2016 elections and how Trump fired James Comey, basically being like, your stories are based on disinfo and we're going to sue you. And of course, they never sued them.
Very hinged behavior.
Exactly. All very normal things. Normal things. So this gives us all some context before we dive into this lawsuit that was filed last month from a former employee at Trump's Bedminster golf property. And I'm going to pull up and send you some pictures from the interior and exterior of Bedminster to kind of set the scene for you of what it looks like inside and outside.
I'm sure it's just the most atrociously gaudy shit.
To be honest, it looks nicer than Mar-a-Lago.
Okay. You sent me a picture of what looks like a ballroom set up for a wedding. And it's, this could be any wedding anywhere. They've got the nice kind of gold cane chairs and very, very elaborate centerpieces and florals. I wouldn't know if this was from the Ritz or somewhere else. You also sent me an exterior picture of what appears to be a fountain that's not on, and it's got a lot of concrete lions all around it. I am counting at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It looks like there might be a sixth one back here.
Don't forget the lions carved into the bottom of the rock, too.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got at least six, like, full body lions. It looks like there are maybe at least two more on the other side. Let's call it like an even 10 full body stone sculptured lions in various poses.
Yes.
On this fountain. And it's a multi-tier fountain. And it looks like there's somebody hanging out on top carved in stone as well.
I wasn't surprised to see that was a fountain on the Bedminster property.
It's very elaborate.
Initiation fees at Bedminster are allegedly more than $350,000. And it's owned by Trump Organization. Importantly, there is a herd of goats that lives on Bedminster, so it qualifies for property tax exemption as farmland.
Is this where they buried Ivana?
Yes, this is where they buried Ivana.
And we think maybe because it gets him some sort of tax exemption to use that as a funeral plot. Okay, cool.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The story we're about to tell, or I'm about to tell, and we're about to hear, is based on the complaint filed by the plaintiff, so all of it is alleged. Like, this is the only filing so far in the lawsuit is the complaint. And also a quick warning, content warning, that the next few minutes, like next 5 minutes, will contain a discussion of unwanted sexual conduct. We won't get into too many details, but they're the allegations in the lawsuit. So our plaintiff, Annie, begins working for Trump National Golf Club at Bedminster in May 2021, and she is 21 years old. She starts working, and her manager is a man we'll call Peter. Peter is in his mid-50s and is the food and beverage manager for the golf club. According to Peter, Annie was required to wear extremely short skirts as part of her uniform, kind of as, you know, the waitress servant at Bedminster. A week after she began working there, it was her birthday, and Peter gave her a very nice bottle of cognac as a birthday present because she was turning 22. Shortly after that, according to Annie, Peter called her into his office and told her that his job was to, quote, protect her, and then he forcibly kissed her. And that wasn't the end of it. He allegedly forced her to sit in his office, talked to him on the couch, you know, spend time with him, no matter how hard she tried to avoid his advances. And within that same month that she started working for the club, Peter allegedly began a sexual quid pro quo relationship with her. And according to Annie, Peter made it clear that she had to engage in this relationship to keep her job and for him to provide her with quote unquote protection at the club. And when he would tell her that, he'd make it clear how much influence he had. He would play videos for Annie of Donald Trump praising him and had all these pictures of him and Trump together. Basically, it's a demonstration of the control he could have over her if she spoke out about this relationship. Mm-hmm. This goes on from May when she starts through July until Annie has to go out of town for a funeral unexpectedly. She goes back to work the next week and she thanks him for allowing her time off. And, you know, allegedly Peter responds to her with, well, what are you going to do for me in return for letting you have this time off, as he pulls on her face towards him. And at this point, Annie's had enough and shoves him away and yells, I don't want you and I've never wanted you, get away from me, and runs away. So good for Annie. Completely unexpectedly, the following day, Annie starts getting much worse shifts at work and all of her tips are being deducted by the other men. And she starts getting written up at work and treated much, much worse.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, weird. This doesn't go unnoticed by Annie's coworkers. The bistro manager at the club is a woman, and she makes an HR complaint on her last day about many of the issues she's witnessed, not only from Peter, but the also other managers. And she says in her written complaint, quote, Peter has forced a female server to perform sexual actions with him and covering it up by stating that he was protecting her while paying her and giving her gifts to remain silent. So, KP, imagine your HR at a reputable company. Do you ignore a complaint like this if you get it?
Oh, yeah. We don't give a shit about that. Carry on.
Yeah.
No, that's like grounds for, I mean, number one, suspending this manager with pay to remove him from the work environment immediately in light of the allegations and conducting a full investigation.
Yeah. Well, even Trump.org follows up on this complaint and starts conducting an investigation. Like, it's so bad that even Trump organization is following up on this.
I mean, we have said these are just allegations, okay? So I'll believe it when it's proven in court.
Yes.
You'll never convince me that any of Trump's organizations are, like, run run like real businesses. So maybe they checked a few boxes, but let's not give credit where we don't know it's due.
Well, Annie is not dumb. Annie realizes that if HR wants to talk to her about this, she should get a lawyer. And so Annie does. She goes and hires a very reputable employment lawyer to represent her in the investigation and any potential claims she may have against Trump Organization. Within a week of this complaint being made to HR, Annie is at work and she's approached by Alina Haba. Alina knows who she is because Annie's waited on her several times before, and Annie has seen Haba sitting with Donald Trump at dinner several times. Haba allegedly tells Annie that she has, quote, heard about what was going on and wanted to help Annie. So initial thoughts at some random third party coming up and saying she wants to help you with your HR complaint against Trump Organization.
Well, I would immediately be alarmed because presumably this is a patron of the club. Mm-hmm. Assuming that Annie is not aware of any sort of relationship between Alina and the Trump Organization, it's like, why is a customer coming up to me about what should have been a confidential HR matter? So that is cause for immediate alarm.
That wasn't all she said. Annie told Haba that she had a lawyer and told Haba who her lawyer was. And I will send you a screenshot of Alina's alleged response to Annie when she heard that Annie had a lawyer.
You know you can fire your lawyer, right?
Thoughts?
Don't do that. That's bad.
Yeah. Alina also allegedly told Annie that she was, quote, completely neutral and that she'd, quote, help Annie with her problem. So the next day, Haba texts Annie, and Annie has helpfully put these screenshots of all of these texts in her complaint.
Does Annie at this point have any understanding of whether there was a relationship between Alina and the Trump Organization beyond Alina simply being a member of the club? Because I am absolutely perplexed about why you wouldn't be throwing a fit about the idea that a club member who has no involvement in the employment relationship has any knowledge of this. And most complainants in the employment context are very sensitive to any perception that you might not be keeping their complaint confidential and that word might get out. I mean, that's a huge concern that people have, reasonably so, when reporting misconduct in the workplace.
Yes. I think Annie's 22 at this point.
No, that's true. Good point.
Yeah. So she does. I don't think she knows better because she truly believes that Alina is her friend. So I sent you a screenshot from Annie's phone. So you be Alina and I'll be Annie.
Hi, love. It's Alina. I wanted to check in on you, spelled with just a U.
OMG, I love you. Cryy face emoji, heart emoji. I'm doing real good. Thank you so much for being here for me.
Sending you my law firm address.
Thank you. I'll see you soon. Heart emoji.
And then it looks like Alina sent the name of Annie's lawyer in some post talking shit about him. And she says, is this the guy? Be careful.
And Annie says, OMG, you're so quick. I literally didn't even think to look this up. Through multiple conversations, Haba convinced Annie that she shouldn't trust her lawyer and told her to ignore her lawyer's texts, calls, and emails, that her lawyer was just going to make things more complicated. And she also tells Annie that, quote, attorneys just want to take control from you.
The call's coming from inside the house.
Yes. In early August, Haba calls Annie and asks to see her on her break. Annie tells her that she only gets a 15-minute lunch during her 16-hour shift.
Shut the fuck up. No.
Yes.
Well, this is in New York, so I know that can't be right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's just thrown in the complaint as, like, part of it. And I'm like, what? No, that's like a record scratch moment.
I know. It's like, pump the brakes. We need to talk about that.
So Annie says, I only get this 15-minute lunch during my 16-hour shift, but that she'll meet Habba in Habba's car in the parking lot. So they text and arrange for Annie to meet Alina in her car. And I have a screenshot for you of what Habba said to Annie allegedly during the meeting.
Attorneys want to take control from you. And with your past, maybe you can get a paltry sum.
Basically telling her, listen, don't use an attorney. You have this checkered history. You're not going to get anything anyway.
What checkered history?
No one, they don't really describe that. But also she's 22. It can't be that checkered.
Right.
Yeah. Habba also allegedly tells Annie that the facts would embarrass her if she went public with her allegations, and that Alina could protect her by preventing that. And so I have one more screenshot for you from the complaint.
And what's terrible about that is that she's right, and we've talked about this on this podcast before, in that people act like women have anything to gain from coming forward yes. with allegations of sexual misconduct, when it's almost always the opposite. There are going to be consequences, or there can be consequences, both from a publicity angle or maybe a work angle or whatever. I mean, this isn't some get-rich-quick scheme by coming forward and
yeah, exactly.
accusing somebody mm-hmm. of sexual misconduct. And so Alina's basically playing into the fear that a lot of people have. So you sent me a screenshot.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Habba said, from the complaint. Yes, from the complaint. Ms. Habba said that all Annie would have to do was sign a quote-unquote simple NDA, and Habba would make sure that Annie was protected.
Again, like, thoughts so far again here? Maybe crossing potential ethical lines, allegedly.
Oh, we're like way past that.
Yes. The following day, Annie texts Alina, and I have that text for you. And this time you can be Annie reading this. It's a short text.
Annie says, hi, I'm at work right now. I just wanted to update you. I did exactly what you said. Nothing. LMFAOO. And the lawyer texted me this morning and fired me? ?? All caps. LMFAOO. I don't get it, but whatever.
Okay, in meeting.
And then Annie heart emojis that.
Yes. So Alina has gotten Annie to fire her lawyer at this point. So Annie is now unrepresented. The texts continue. At one point, Habba texts Annie that she only wants her to help her, quote, two really good friends, meaning Donald Trump and Annie, come to a solution here.
Wow.
So on August 11th, which is 13 days after the complaint was made, Habba told Annie to come to Habba's office to sign a settlement and release agreement with the golf club and Trump organization. Annie shows up and Habba is there along with the other partner at her law firm. Habba's firm had drafted the settlement agreement for Annie to sign. Habba's partner asked whether Annie's prior lawyer should receive any portion of the settlement, and I will give you Alina's response to her partner when she answered that.
It's a severance agreement. He doesn't get anything because I'm a great lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Before Annie signs the agreement, Habba explains to Annie that the settlement payment to her will be tax-free.
Oh.
And she says, quote, technically you're getting the full amount because the golf club, will pay the taxes. And so she's saying, not only are you going to get the settlement amount, but apparently she's saying that Bedminster will gross you up to cover the taxes. So you would get net whatever the settlement agreement is that we're saying you're going to get. And you're making a face.
Okie dokie.
I'm just going to say, I haven't seen that happen before. Mm, and I've been involved in a few of those. Annie also asked if she needed to have a lawyer look over the agreement before she signed it. And Habba allegedly told her, quote, I'm trying to help you and you're going to make it more difficult.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Annie signs the agreement. Habba never gives her a copy of it, either signed or not. And after she signs, allegedly Alina told her that she can't try and sell her story to the media because then Annie would owe Trump the settlement amount and she could probably only sell her story for about $3,000 anyway.
Oh, okay.
Let's discuss the settlement agreement itself. New Jersey has a law, like many states at the time, that would not prohibit Annie from discussing the underlying facts of the sexual harassment. Basically, you can't put in a settlement agreement where you waive claims of sexual harassment that the person agrees that they may not talk about them. It's confidential, things like that. The agreement, however, says something different. It says that she is required to maintain confidentiality and cannot discuss any of the underlying facts. And it also has the provision I just sent you underlined in red for you to read.
In the event that it is determined by a competent court of law that Annie did, in fact, breach any of her obligations, Annie shall be required to return the payment to employer within 7 days. An employer shall be entitled to additional relief in the amount of $1,000 for each day of the applicable violation period. So, depending on when this is discovered,
mm-hmm.
she could owe thousands of dollars, tens yes. of thousands of dollars. And you're talking about somebody who is, number one, very young and early in their career and working as a waitress.
Yeah, exactly. Unsophisticated, young, early in her career, definitely doesn't have thousands upon thousands of dollars to pay as a penalty for an agreement provision that expressly violates the law.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a section in there where she affirmatively waives her independent right, her right to independent counsel. And it notes that the agreement was prepared by, quote, a neutral attorney representing neither party at this point in time.
Oh, that sounds wrong.
Mm-hmm. The agreement also provides that Annie is responsible for her taxes on any payment.
Oh. Hmm.
Yeah. Not surprisingly, Annie's CPA has questions when tax time comes up around in April 2022. And Annie reaches out to her good friend Alina to sort that out. And I will send you this. I will be Annie and you be Alina. So they've been talking and Annie says, perfect. I can email you or can I give you my CPA uncle's number? I really appreciate everything you've done for me thus far and I hate to bother you, but there's a few additional information that he needs I thought were answered. If you can call him to clear everything up, I'd really appreciate it. And again, I'm so grateful for everything you've helped me with already. I feel so bad bothering you at the recital, so you can deal with this tomorrow when you have the chance.
I can't technically give you legal advice. That's the problem.
Funny how the response has changed mm-hmm. from Alina at this point in time.
Yeah, she's like, get lost. I got what I need from you.
Yeah, exactly. And she follows up and...
I was happy to find out how your check was processed, but beyond that, I'm not sure I can assist.
That's the thing he needs to figure out, referring to her CPA.
Oh, they said payroll, through payroll, and they paid tax on it, so you netted $15K.
All the tax?
Like, payroll. So, however that was processed for you, same. And I do want to note I haven't been calling it out, but every time she says you, it is just spelled you.
Yes. Yes. And again, on April 15th, Annie reaches out to Alina and is like, hey, can I FaceTime you really quick? And Alina's like, can't give you legal advice, and basically doesn't respond after that.
Yeah, Alina's like, I don't know her.
Yeah, exactly. And it's at this point that Annie realizes Alina is actively representing Trump against other women. You know, if you look at the timeline, Annie signs the settlement agreement on August 13th, and then... on September 3rd is when Alina enters her first public appearance on behalf of President Trump in the defamation cases. So Annie realizes that Habba has been representing him against other women. She then reaches out to Habba to get a copy of her settlement agreement in April. And she's finally given it on April 28th, which is over 8 months since she had signed it the prior year. And at that point, she files this lawsuit, basically alleging that Habba, you know, had created an attorney-client privilege relationship with her through her representation and, you know, seeking
seeking discipline on behalf of Habba, and then an injunction permitting Annie to discuss her settlement and rendering her agreement null and void.
Yeah, they need to void the agreement.
Yeah, exactly.
If these allegations are anywhere close, if they're in the same universe as the truth, and you sent me a lot of screenshots of text messages, and of course anybody can cherry pick text messages, but these do all appear to be very damning. So if this is in the same universe as the truth, this agreement needs to be voided and Alina needs to get disbarred.
I mean, it's insane. We have the first one is the anti-contact rule, and you can't speak to a represented party when you know that they're represented, and you certainly can't then try and tell them to fire their lawyer so that they're unrepresented.
Can you imagine?
Can you imagine? Yeah, I can't imagine being even in the same realm of making the choices that she's allegedly made here. And like you said, I've only sent you some of the text messages that were some of the more entertaining or enlightening, but there are pages and pages of Alina, what looks to be grooming this young woman, thinking she's her friend, sending her a little text, making her feel like she's very, very close and they're good friends. I haven't sent the ones where Annie's constantly like, you're my best friend. You're so close. Thank you so much for your help. I'd never be able to do this without you. I mean, just purportedly grooming this woman to get her to settle for what apparently is a paltry sum to keep this quiet.
Yeah, that's pretty diabolical.
Yeah. And it's very similar to, I don't know, did you read Catch and Kill?
Yeah, by Ronan Farrow. I listened to it, which, by the way, if anybody has not read it and wants to, he narrates it and it is exceptionally good.
It's so good. He also had a podcast that he did as well, which is probably basically the same thing as the audiobook, but it is so good. And it's extremely reminiscent of the Catch and Kill scheme, which is you go and find these stories and buy them off for a tiny sum to prevent them from being sold to the media. So it's disgusting, if true. And we will have to pay attention to see what happens to Alina with this, because these are just wildly inappropriate actions, if even like close to the truth, and would merit something in the realm of disbarment, you would think.
1,000%.
Yes, yeah. Like, this is doing the very opposite of what an attorney should be purporting to do.
I can't wait to find out 3 years from now.
Yeah, 3 years from now when she's fined $5,000 and is put on probation for a year or something.
Well, hopefully this is, I mean, what we've seen that drives a lot of the decisions where discipline actually is significant is publicly embarrassing the bar and making lawyers look like shitheads. And if all of this is true, Alina sure did that here. So my guess would be, if I'm looking into my crystal ball, my guess would be that she's going to get slapped pretty hard.
Well, we will keep our fingers crossed and keep you guys updated on this one. And we will also keep you updated on when our next episode will be.
Well, we'll keep you updated by publishing it. So
yeah, exactly.
And until then, our limited edition winter merch is available for purchase if you would like to do that. That's linked in the episode description. And you can find us on social media at Bad Lawyer Pod. And you can also email us tips. We love your emails at badlawyerpod@gmail.com.
Thanks, guys.